My name is Sally Mason, and I belong to the League of Women Voters. And this forum is being sponsored by the Bozeman Public Library, the League of Women Voters of the Bozeman area, and the Bozeman Professional and Business and Professional Women. I always get it wrong. And we are delighted to provide this forum for everybody's education. The League is very, and so is everybody else, interested in making sure that we have an educated electorate. And I want to thank all the candidates for coming tonight. So we're going to start with each of the candidates getting 90 seconds to introduce themselves or to say why you ought to vote for them, whatever your pleasure is, gentlemen. And I have a mic that hopefully is going to work. So we're going to start with Scott McFarlane.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming. I'm Scott McFarlane. I'm from Eastern Montana, Coal Strip, and I came here right after high school to run track for MSU. I knew in high school that this was the town that I was going to live the rest of my life in, and I'm still excited to be here. So I went to MSU, then after that I went and worked at Bridger Bowl for a few years. I decided I wanted to fly helicopters. Flew helicopters for several years, taught people to fly, did some commercial logging, firefighting. That turned out to not be the greatest job for a parent of three little kids to have. So I went to work for MSU in facilities management, and that's how I came to be at Belgrade Schools as the facilities director. I plan on being here in Bozeman for another 4 years, God willing. And I know that my kids, I think, would like to live here for even longer. So I feel that it's my responsibility to get involved and help keep this county and valley a place that people continue to love.
Thank you very much, and thanks to the League for sponsoring this tonight. It's very important. Good evening. My name is Steve White. I'm one of your Gallant County Commissioners. I'm presently chair of the commission. I first took office in 2007. I was born here in Bozeman, as well as was my father and my grandfather. I graduated from Bozeman Senior High. I graduated then, went to MSU, graduated geology and computer science, then took a job with Department of Natural Resources and Conservation in Helena as a geohydrologist. And I had that job for 4 or 5 years. Then I started a software business, had that for about 25 years. And my interest in the community is skiing, and I love mountain biking year round. And also I do a lot of sailing. As your county commissioner, there's a number of projects that I've been involved in and I'm very proud of. One was the completion of the 911 center with fire station number 3. Then also I had a key position with the construction of the detention center that has done very well. And also I was very involved in the Belgrade interchange, which is out by the airport. Presently I represent the county commission statewide on a very important legislative committee that is the Montana Groundwater Assessment Steering Committee. We meet quarterly and make some important decisions related to groundwater. I also serve for a year up at Big Sky, the Sustainable Water Solutions Forum, which is designed, which is a group for the protection of the Gallatin River. Thank you.
And these gentlemen are running for county commissioner. And now we are going to do Senate District 32, and we have 3 candidates.
Thank you, Sally. My name is Pat Flowers. I want to thank the League of Women's Voters for hosting this tonight, and thank especially all of you for showing up. And by way of personal background, I'm married. My wife couldn't be here tonight, unfortunately. And I have 4 daughters who are also going to try and make it, but I don't see them, so they wander in at some point. I have an educational and work history background in natural resources, received a forestry degree and master's in forest economics.
My educational history is in forestry and master's in forest economics, both from that school on the other side of the state, going unmentioned. I worked in wildfire research for the Forest Service in Riverside, California. I went on to work in forest management and rainforest management program, and then was a supervisor for fish, wildlife, and parks here in southwestern Montana for about 15 years. What I bring to the Montana Senate is extensive leadership. I manage complex programs, large staff, and dealt with, I think, the most difficult resource problems in the state. And I think the problem-solving skills that I learned there and applied there also worked really well in the Senate. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming here. My name is Jedediah Hinkle. I'm the current state senator in Senate District 32 and just about completed my first term and running for my second and last term in the Montana Senate. I was raised in Phillipsburg, Montana, and I moved to Bozeman here 20 years ago to attend Montana State University and earn my degree in the field of fish and wildlife management. And from then on, I've worked in the field of native trout restoration and taxidermy. Actually, 4 years ago when I was running for office, I was not even dating anyone. But upon election, within 1 year, I was married to my beautiful wife right up front here, Kendall. So she gets to join me on the campaign trail this time. Upon my election to the Senate in 2014, I've served on the Judiciary Committee, the Natural Resources Committee, and the State Administration Committee, and I'm currently the Vice Chair of the Fish and Game Committee. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Francis Wendt. I'm Libertarian candidate for Senate District 32. A little bit about me is I grew up in Great Falls, joined the U.S. Air Force, served 6 years in the Air Force, and then I moved to Bozeman in 2006 to pursue an electrical engineering degree. That didn't quite work out. I swapped over to business and economics, and with that I've studied extensively as to how economic issues affect lower poverty issues. I've also used that in my in serving on the board of directors of the Blue Slipper Theater over in Livingston. I served as the president, I served as the treasurer, secretary, and vice president. So I kind of did the whole gambit on that for the past 4 years. So really what I bring to the table is I bring another option, I bring another choice. We see a very highly partisan and divided electorate, and we need to start bringing civility back into politics and having the discussions, even if they're not discussions that we agree with. It's very important to have them, and that's why I'm running for the Senate.
And you will notice that we have a timer in the front, and she will hold up paddles telling the candidates how much longer they have. And when she holds up stop, then I show up.
There's a bell.
Hi, my name is Sam Newville. I am a resident of the Gallatin Valley for almost my whole life. I graduated from Bozeman Senior High, and I've been lucky enough to live in Belgrade the last 37 years. I raised my family with my wife Jan, Kayla, and Nick. And the reason I want to get involved with this is I'm going to have some time. I'm getting older, and I look at this growth that we've had, and I think it's time to have participation. And I've watched as nobody has participated, no one's been challenged, and I think it's time. So my goals are, I like to hunt, I like to fish. I believe in education, health, public lands, and all those things I feel are being threatened. And so that's why I'm involved. And I'm not a politician, but I'm learning. So thank you.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Gordy Vance, and I want to introduce my wife, Shelley, before I say a little bit about me and who I am. I currently represent Senate District 34. I have served 5 sessions in the state legislature, 3 in the House, 2 in the Senate. One of the ones when I was in the House, I served as the House Majority Leader, and I'm here to hopefully answer some questions and ask you for your vote tonight. Thank you.
So we asked the Senate candidates to answer the following question. What is your plan for addressing the lack of mental health services in Montana? And each of these five candidates get 2 minutes apiece to respond to that question. Who wants to start?
So
mental health, this this issue stems from the budget that the state Congress passed and had to come and reconvene and pass a second budget, because and mental health got cut as one of the budget items. We saw that through providing provider abilities did not, excuse me. So there's a distinct problem with mental health in this area, in this state. We have a very high suicide rate that's been brought to the attention, and it's fair if we are one of the top states in the nation. And I believe that we really need to start digging down deep into the mental health problems and start putting some grant money and some research money into looking at what are the underlying causes of the mental health. And I believe I believe that one of the driving factors of mental health and suicide in the state is economic disparity. So the less money that someone has in their pocket, the more likely they are going to be in a depressive state, self-medicate, and move to other options. So I think we need to look at the root causes rather than the Band-Aid fixes. As it really comes down to it, it's a pressing issue, and it's not an issue that you can really solve by just throwing a ton of money at treatment that we aren't sure is going to work. We need to make sure that what we're doing and what we're going to accomplish is going to be effective, is going to have real results.
I believe that one of the major things we're looking at with our mental health is the reduction of the funds that have gone into it. And it's gone across the board. It's not just mental, it's everything that we are looking at. And in the last legislature, they told us that their goal was to get rid of the Medicaid expansion and this and that. And when in a time when we're cutting these resources to these problems, we can't take all the money away and then think that we're going to solve the problem. And money doesn't help everything, and you're right about that. But it does; it's a start. And mental health, I think, needs to be treated like any other health problem. And it comes right back to the same thing, health problem in the United States, whether it's Obamacare or whatever. But people have to be taken care of. And I believe that that's one of the government's jobs, is to be able to negotiate through those things for people that don't have the money. Go to Rimrock for drug dependency or something like that. It's like $5,000 or $8,000 a month. Where does a common person come up with that? And mental health is all at the basis of it. So that's my opinion.
Very quickly, to give you kind of the 30,000 foot view of how the budget works. The governor puts a budget together, he submits it to the legislature. The legislature goes through it, and we make recommendations to him. Then we sit down with him, and we kind of try to reach a middle ground as to what each department is going to be able to spend. But what we don't have anything to say about, and a lot of people think we do, is we don't have anything to say about how the money gets spent within the department. As an example, when we would make a department arrangement with Department of Transportation, we then don't sit down with the director and say, okay, you're going to spend this much on plowing and this much on paving and this much on rumble strips down the middle of the highway. He makes those decisions. He makes them and the governor makes them. So we are allowed to make recommendations. And what we did do with DPHHS is we did recommend to the governor that he make his cuts at the top, where the administrative people are, and leave the folks at the bottom that are really doing the work alone. He chose not to do that, and as to why, you would kind of have to ask him. Thank you.
So part of the reason why we have a lack of mental services here in Montana is actually due to the Medicaid expansion. So Medicaid was expanded vertically, it wasn't expanded categorically. Medicaid was originally intended to be for people on disabilities, senior citizens, people in need that can't help themselves. When Medicaid was expanded in 2015, it was expanded to just any individual within about 140% of the federal poverty level. That means individuals who may choose to work less part-time or may choose jobs that are earn less money, whatever, but they don't necessarily have a disability and they're not necessarily seniors. So when those people actually start getting in the program, they take resources from other individuals that the program was meant to be for. So if Medicaid actually does sunset in Montana, then I think that we should take some of those savings, which would probably be at least $80 million of savings, and we can apply them more towards mental health and developmental disabilities and things like that. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, my plan would be first to focus on an awareness of the mental health issues in this state. And I think we're doing a better job of that now. I think there's general awareness that we've got highest suicide rate in the country, and that it has to be a priority for us as a state and certainly as a community. To do that, I think we need to pass I-185, which is going to provide the state's share of reauthorizing expanded Medicaid, which I support and I think is extremely important going into the next session. Because of Medicaid expansion, we're saving about $3 million a year for people who were previously treated under the Montana Health Services Program, and that now they've transferred full Medicaid, so there's some savings there and good service. We've been able to increase Medicaid funding under expanded Medicaid for substance abuse disorder by $2.6 million, which accounts for a lot of the mental health issues in the state. In rural Montana, often the only options for mental health come from local clinics or local hospitals, and Medicaid expansion has really bolstered those rural hospitals, and so there's real value there to rural Montana, which I think probably faces the toughest road when it comes to treatment for mental health. I-185, which I recommend that we pass, will provide about $2 million towards suicide prevention for veterans. We have one of the highest veteran populations in the country, and it's really important that they get more help there. I think we also need to focus on some innovative approaches. MSU created a Center for Mental Health Research and Recovery in 2015, and they've partnered with groups like One Montana to provide some really innovative solutions. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. The question that we pose to the county commissioner candidates is the following. How will you work with the cities of our county to foster responsible growth?
That's a great question. And presently in Gallup County, we have 22 zoning districts, but a lot of the growth right now is actually in the cities. Right now, presently, Gallup County has no applications in our planning department for major subdivisions, and that is six parcels or greater. And the reason is probably because of the exempt well law, and there is a need for water and sewer. Right now, we're working, our planning department is working with the City of Bozeman's planning department to work on a buffer area, and we're not sure how far that'll be. It could be around 1,500 feet, so that we can coordinate our planning between Bozeman and the county. We also have the Planning Coordination Committee, which is a committee that's focused on the triangle, which is between Four Corners, Belgrade, and Bozeman, and that's where a lot of the growth is going to occur. I serve the County Commission on the Bozeman Area Transportation Coordinating Committee. That's a very important committee that deals with some of the transportation needs of the county. We're also modifying our growth policy, and I support that, the revision of our growth policy. And we're also working with the City of Manhattan on their planning area. But the County Commission, recognizing that a lot of the growth is in the cities, we deal with the infrastructure. We've got a new 911 center coordinated with the city with Fire Station 3. We've got a new interchange. And as you were just read in the paper, we now, for the first time, own the land under the Logan landfill. We did an exchange with the NRC. and I've worked with the groundwater situation and also with the preservation of the Gallatin River with Big Sky. So those are the challenges that we have as county commissioners.
What motivated me initially to get involved in county and start paying attention and to run for county commissioner was a strong belief that the county's responsibility is to be the leadership in our county, for us to realize how we're going to absorb all the growth that we expect to happen. And leadership doesn't necessarily mean having the answers to everything. More importantly, it's a responsibility to make sure that everyone's involved in the discussion and that the relationships are as good as they can be for the challenges that we have to face, which are going to be huge. And we know that the next 10 years are going to be critical for how we incentivize growth in our county. Steve's correct. We have a lot of zoning districts in our county that encompass the entire valley. It's all covered by zoning districts. But it's time to recognize that the city, that large parts of the county will one day be city very soon, and that the county should be leading in that relationship with the city to make sure that that transition from becoming from county to city is as easy as possible on the taxpayer and as efficient as possible and cost the least amount of money. And I also want to be clear that it's not just the relationship between the city and the counties that will be crucial to us growing the county that we want to have. It's going to be relationships with other groups as well that are not city and county. There are other subdivisions of government like the school districts that make their own decisions that will drive growth. There are private utilities, public utilities, private fire districts. All of these groups will be required to be together and be on the same page so that we are growing the county and the valley the way that we want it to happen.
Okay, now we're going to do rapid-fire questions. And you guys don't know what they are. So the first question, I want you to just shout out your answers. I'm going to start with you, Pat. What's the last book you read?
It's called American by Day by Derek Miller, and it's outstanding. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's a sequel to Norwegian by Night. So.
Jedediah?
Okay, Terry C. Johnson wrote the book, and it's a Mountain Man book, and it's a sequel. I can't remember that book's name, but other ones in the sequel are One I Dream, Carry the Wind, and it's... I'm kind of a mountain guy myself, so that's the last book I read.
Empire and Earth, Isaac Asimov.
Okay. Gentlemen?
The last book I read was White Death by Mark Jenkins, and it's about five mountain climbers up on Mount Cleveland, but I knew all of them that were killed in an avalanche in the end of 1969. So,
not just, a pick me up.
Yeah, I'm sorry to ask the question.
Scott?
Secret History by Donna Tartt, who just won the Nobel Prize for Goldfish.
Okay. Sam?
North American Valkyrie and Hunting Hawks.
Gordy?
A biography of Ronald Reagan that I have not finished because it's about that thick.
I bet. Okay, dogs or cats, Gordy?
I'm sorry?
Preference, dogs or cats?
Oh, dogs.
Sam?
Dogs.
Cats.
Oh, gosh. I like both. probably dogs, maybe.
Pat?
Well, I'm going to betray my cat, Mac, and have to go with dogs.
Okay.
I'm glad my wife's not here. She loves cats, and she has a corgi, and I'm not so sure about that. I love the corgi, okay? I know it's going to be a podcast, so I love the corgi.
Scott?
Dogs.
Dogs, okay. And what was your last what's your favorite vacation destination? Start with you, Scott.
The Gravelines. We do a trail run every year with my family through the Gravelines.
Nice. Scott?
Steve?
Sorry. I just came home from overseas. I'm a little slow tonight.
The favorite time I had was we sailed a 42-foot sailboat up by Vancouver Island into Desolation Sound.
Nice. Pat?
Probably top of my mind is I did a trip into the Bob Marshall last year for the first time in a long time, and I won't tell you how many fish we caught, and I won't tell you where we went.
Okay.
Mine would have to be my honeymoon in Thailand.
Okay.
I enjoy going to Indianapolis for Gen Con, which is a national gaming convention, just any kind of game, every kind of game. The last 4 days is great.
Sam?
Zortman, Montana.
Who?
Zortman, Montana.
Zortman, Montana.
I don't like that, but Zortman, Montana is public land.
Okay. Gordy?
Sally, for the last 10 years, my wife and I have spent a week every summer up in the Flathead. Beautiful up there, and there's some really nice golf courses up there, too.
Okay. All right, here's what we're going to do now. We're going to do questions from you. And I would ask that you stand up and shout your question as loud as you can. Make sure that it's a question and not a speech. We don't do speeches. I will stop you if you do a speech. I'm mean. And direct, you can direct the question to any one person. If it's a Senate question, it's going to go to these guys. If it's a county commissioner question, it's going to go to these guys. And so you might ask a question of Pat, but then everybody else gets to respond if they want, and they each get a minute to respond. So, first question, right there. A man who came to the last forum and didn't get to ask his question.
Well, that question, first for Pat, and I'd like all the Senate to answer. In 2017, the legislature brought forward Senate Bill 236, a bill to amend the Montana Constitution to give sportsmen, such as myself, the right to hunt, fish, and trap due to attacks across the nation towards hunting and trapping. The bill is very important to us sportsmen and women to protect our heritage. However, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks have been endlessly opposed to legislation, if elected, Pat. And this legislation were brought again in 2019. Would you stand with the sportsmen such as myself, or would you side with the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks agency that you have very close ties to and retired from?
I would resist the premise that I have close ties with them. At this point, I retired 4 years ago, and at this point, I'm no different than you or any other sportsman. I wasn't in the session, so I don't know all the ins and outs of that bill. I know the department opposed it and others opposed it too. My understanding is the general belief is that it was unnecessary, and there was also a concern that it would inappropriately limit the options for management for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. They are charged with managing our game populations and our fish populations in the state. We have the longest elk hunting season in the country, a 5-week season. We've got robust populations. And so I think, although I can certainly stand apart from them, I would want to listen to what their opinions were before I made a call. Thank you.
And gentlemen, you don't have to respond to a question unless you're asked it directly, but if you want to respond, you may.
So I was in there for that bill, and it was a big eye-opener for me to watch Fish, Wildlife, and Parks actually come after that bill and the sportsmen of Montana. The reason why it was brought is because the language that currently is in our Constitution is very vague, and the Humane Society of Montana has actually said that they're going to use the ballot box to bring down hunting in the U.S., and so this was an attempt to try to protect sportsmen, protect our right to even for subsistence to hunt. That bill actually specifically gave the managing authority, which is Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, to continue that authority. It was actually specifically in that legislation. And there was a few groups that opposed it initially, and by the time that it went over to the House of Representatives, most of those groups came on board, a number of them did. So 14 different states have actually passed rights to hunt fish in the U.S. here, and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks treated it like we were the first one.
So I would say that recreation and access to hunting and fishing is very important. I'm not a fisherman myself, so I don't know exactly, I don't have that draw, so I do actually have a perspective where I'm looking at from a logical point of view. I definitely would like to drill down into the language of it and see what is most equitable for all stakeholders. And through that lens, yes, I would I would definitely support anything that gives more freedoms to hunters and fishers.
Sure.
Sportsmen.
Other questions?
This is for the candidates for county commission. How do you, have you thought about increasing the numbers of county commissioners?
That is an excellent question. Presently, there are three county commissioners, and that is what the majority of the counties in the state have. There's one county, Ravalli County, that has five, and they're going back to three. The activities of the county commission is really, there's really no advantage to the five that we've found, but that would be, I think it would have to come through a change of government, and it's not up to us to do that. That would be every 10 years with the census that you can ask to have the form of government looked at and examined, and that could be, you could change it to nonpartisan. You go to Madison County, they serve 4 years, they serve by district. Every county can do it a little differently, but the one that did go to five is going back to three.
All I can say is that I would support having that discussion for our county, seeing why we would want to have five. And like Steve said, all I understand is that counties that have tried it have retreated back to three. I'd like to know more about why five doesn't work as well. City commissions seem to be okay with five. So I'd certainly support talking about it.
Thank you.
Good question.
My question is for the Senate candidates. So just a bit of a background to my question. I'm actually going home this weekend. I'm going to be guiding a bunch of hunters on our place. So I, you know, follow up with you, to follow your question. But I went to school to a really liberal college in New York City, and I'm probably not going to talk to my hunters about my kind of beliefs in economics and stuff like that. But one thing that we are going to talk about is we are going to talk about the weather. We are going to talk about the changes that we've all been seeing and that kind of stuff. And I very likely will bring up the fact that the UN just released this new study on the fact that we have until 2030 to change the direction that we're going with climate. I believe that it is grassroots responsibilities to
what,
make those
What's
changes.
Your question, ma'am?
Where do you guys stand on bringing in policies that tax or put the fiscal responsibility of environmental change on the largest environmental impactors, such as companies, as energy companies?
Okay, I'm going to stop you now. Who wants to answer that question first?
I'm a believer. I believe in climate change. I believe that it's man-made. I think that the things that we're doing to the environment are contributing to what we're seeing. You don't have to be old to see this happening or any of that. Yes, I believe that people should be held accountable. There are things that we can do. There's other countries right now that are taking it, pushing forward with renewables, and we seem to be catering to a very few people that have interest in extract minings of oils and whatever. You look at our rivers. If you're a guide, you know what I'm talking about. Years ago, you didn't ever, when you thought of fishing, you thought you could eat the fish in any stream in this state. Not anymore. When you think of those kinds of states, you think of Illinois, someplace down in the Gulf, something like that. But you never thought of Montana being that way. And yeah, there's got to be some responsibility.
Thank you. I believe the word that was used is national, and that's what I believe that is. Number one, I don't believe that the science is necessarily settled, although I do believe there is climate change, but I do believe it's a national issue. Thank you.
So when I ran for State House in 2016, I was asked this question by Troy Carter from the Bozeman Chronicle, and I did see that climate change is happening, that it is, you know, man-made. The problem is that you can't really gloss over the economics of it. When I look at things like President Obama's Clean Power Plan, it would have actually cost, it would have required Montana to shutter half of our power supplies and would have cost a very large amount of money into the billions to replace that power production. It's a problem, yes, but it's a problem that we have to look at the next 40 years. It's not something that can be decided in the next four. I mean, I have a nephew who actually works in renewable energy, so it is very, I'm very aware of the situation, and it has to be decided through a stage process. 2030, we'll see.
So I've actually carried renewable energy legislation in the Senate, and I do believe in renewables. I think they're a good thing that we should advance towards in the future. However, as far as taxing goes, if anyone knows my record, I generally oppose taxes. So when it comes down to, you know, taxing certain individuals or certain companies, I wouldn't be in support of that. I believe that taxes should be fair and equal across the board.
Yes, I think climate change is real, and I think it's man-caused, and I think there are things we should be doing right now to address it. I don't think we should pass it off as a national issue. I think it's a local issue. I think it's a state issue as well as a national issue. Unfortunately, we're not getting the national leadership on this, but we can lead at a state level, and I think we should be doing it. As far as taxing, I guess I'd have to explore that more to decide whether that's the correct technique. I do believe that there are, quote, externalities associated with burning gas, oil, and coal that we're all absorbing in terms of health effects and or climate change and everything that goes with that. So those costs aren't being addressed by the companies that are making the money on the production. And somehow I think if they were, then renewables would become much more competitive and would be adopted more quickly. Thank you.
Yes.
Just going on the topic of the growth of the county and being responsible, I was curious how the county is taking responsibility for combating increased risk of trafficking and other issues like kidnapping and just violent crime increase. Because we do have a large construction industry right now, and it brings a lot of temporary work that potentially brings opportunistic people to our county who don't exactly have Montana values or family values. I'm a mom of two who are 5 and 2. And at Costco this summer, I've lived here 7 years. I was watched by a group of men from the store out into the parking lot.
Okay,
and
I'm going to stop you.
All I could do to get my kids into the car and lock the doors, which these events are happening more and more.
Okay,
so,
I'm going to stop you.
Okay,
we have a question. Sure. Are you content with the question?
I'm content with the question.
Okay, who wants to answer it first?
I don't. Thank you for that question. I hate to answer a question by saying we're not in charge of this particular part of the county, but we have an effect on that part of the county, and that the law enforcement is the sheriff. That's an elected position, and we have authority over his budget. And when he makes requests to us, then we can consider those requests. This year, we approved 3 new deputies. He typically isn't operating inside the city. He has jurisdiction inside the city. That's typically the Bozeman Police Department. And if it's up at MSU, they have their police department. But the courts are state funded. And we as county commissioners, we haven't had a lot of interaction with how the sheriff conducts his office. But that is a concern we have. And so we're dealing with it through the budget process.
I would say the support of the sheriff's office is the greatest effect the county commission can have on public safety. And I can tell you, I sat with the sheriff's union, that their association, several weeks ago, and after hearing their concerns and how much more they feel they need to properly care for our county, What I left them with was my recommendation to strengthen their union and to make their voice heard about what holes they see in public safety in our county, to kind of force the hand of the commission the next time that budget talks come up about how many more people they need and radio communications and response times and how many people are on at night. All kinds of those things get pretty concerning once you start to hear from them what they see and what they feel they're lacking in. So yeah, that's about as far as it goes.
Response
there,
just very briefly.
Sure.
The legislature, and particularly the Attorney General Tim Fox, we spent a lot of time on this issue during the last session, and we have every intention of proceeding with it because it's a huge statewide problem, not just Costco and Bozeman. But I wanted you to know that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Senator Vance stole my thunder. I tried to get your attention first. But I do sit on the Judiciary Committee, and it was an eye-opener to me to learn the facts and figures of what's going on, not just in our state, but in the nation concerning human trafficking. I've randomly found myself watching multiple movies and documentaries this year on human trafficking and learning more about it. If there's ways in the legislature that we can address it more, maybe by a county level, or give these men more authority in that area, then we should, by all means, should do so. But it has been a definite topic in the legislature that we have been addressing. Thanks.
It's a question for everybody, because my biggest concern right now is the hyper-partisanship that's making it so hard at all levels of government for us to work together to govern. And so I'm wondering if each of you might touch a little bit on your thoughts about that and what your record and experience is working with folks across party lines and who don't think like you to get things done.
Thank you for the question. Who wants?
Gordy.
There you go.
Thank you, Sally. Very briefly, last legislative session, I carried Senate Bill 44. What that was a bill to make it illegal in Montana for air ambulance services to balance bill people. And what that meant is that when people had to use the service, sometimes their insurance would pay $10,000, $20,000, and the air ambulance service thought their service was worth $70,000 or $80,000, and this poor individual was caught in the middle. And so what we did was pass legislation that said, you guys have to work it out. You let the person out of the middle of your disagreement on the fees. The bill passed out of the Senate with no opposition. It passed out of the House 96-4. So I do think I was able to bring everybody together on an important issue. Thank you.
As far as the partisan thing goes, I think people have to sit back and realize that we're just like anybody else in your community. I've talked to a lot of people that say, I'm Republican and you're Democrat, but I'll vote for you because I like you. Once people get to know you, I believe that the partisan stuff goes away. And yes, when people get up to Helena, there's going to be a lot more of this and that, but you've got to remain in the middle and say, you know, these are the people that got me elected. My district is a lot of Republicans. If I don't win them over, I'm going nowhere. So I think by this process, we're weeding us out. Thanks.
So as a third party candidate, I think I have a very unique way of bridging the partisan divide. I am actually the state chair of the Montana Libertarian Party, so I'm not really answering to anyone. I answer to the voters who put me in office. That's it. So what it comes down to is I can see the good on what the Republican Party stands for. I can see the good that the Democratic Party stands for. And I can be that middle ground that's going to represent the people in that. The Libertarian Party is a healthy mix of both liberal and conservative viewpoints. And looking at it through a logical perspective and trying to actually negotiate and say, hey, how can we get something accomplished for the better of the people? Because what I'm concerned with is giving the people the most freedoms possible.
You know, I remember sitting on the Senate floor when I was first elected, confused after the first weeks, because we had all these bills that were coming off bipartisan, unanimous, all Republicans, all Democrats. And as I learned throughout the process, I found out that the majority of the bills probably are bipartisan bills. And in the state government, we really do get along with each other very well. We treat each other with respect. We laugh, we joke, we have fun. And there's another Democrat colleague that came to legislature the next year, and she told me one day after committee, she goes, "Everybody's so nice here." And she said, "I came here to, thinking that I was going to have to fight and that, you know, fight to the death and stand up for this and that." And she goes, "It's not like that. Everybody is so nice and we all get along." But I carried multiple bills. I carried bills for Democrat organizations in my district. Or sorry, not in my district. I've carried bills for Democrats in my district and also Democrat organizations and also Republicans. I actually have gone out of my way to try to do something for everyone in my district. Thanks.
I spent a career working on really tough fish and wildlife issues and forestry issues, things like wolf recovery, reintroduction, which was really contentious, grizzly bear delisting, river recreation conflicts on the Madison and on the Big Hole in Beaverhead, and on and on. And in every case, what we were able to do is sit down at a table, and we never asked what political affiliations people had, and they were all quite different. And instead, we focused on together defining the problem. We, through a process, were able to bring out underlying interests that were around the table. And once we had that on the table, it was much easier to then work through the problem solving in a productive way and come to agreement. It's not as Pollyanna as that sounds. There's a lot of head knocking and tough stuff that goes into it. But it's possible, and I think it's a good model that I want to take to the state senate.
Thank you for that question. That's an incredibly good question. For people that have come to the county commission meetings and sat in on some of our hearings, I hope you've never, ever been able to see any sort of body language from the county commissioners when somebody's testifying, and that complete respect is always provided to everyone that is there. When you come to the microphone, you come with passion, and we respect that greatly. In the past, there have been people that I know that probably didn't support me, and maybe they might have been surprised when I made a motion to put them on a committee. That's important. The citizens, regardless of your affiliation of a party, need to be engaged in the government. And I'm proud of the county government that we have, that I don't think you can probably tell what party we're with, but the big thing is that we treat everyone with equal respect, and that's what the public expects from us. So, and I'm proud of that, and I learned a lot of it from the legislature, from their hearing process.
I'm really happy to report after 14 months of this process that after being out and talking to the number of people that I have and the number of times that Steve and I have been together, the number of times I've seen these guys together, that I haven't experienced the ugliness we're seeing at the national level locally. I think we should all be very proud of the process that we have here and how civil everyone is. I'll say that it's certainly a good question about how much the county does is actually partisan. And I find myself telling people regularly that I don't see a lot of the business of the county as very partisan business. It's very management oriented, just like facilities management. It's just one large facility, roads, bridges, subdivisions, reviewing people's applications. There's very little opportunity for partisanship. Every once in a while there are things. But as far as the rest of the county elected positions go, I think that it's a really good question whether they should even be partisan elected.
Hi, I'm Jan Stroud. I've Bozeman at COVID, with others in this room, a campaign for equal pay for equal work in the city of Bozeman, which passed unanimously. Montana ranks 46th.
Your question?
Of gender inequality. What would, this is directed for the county commission and the senators. So, will you support a process to evaluate gender discrimination in pay, and if evidence of gender discrimination and racial discrimination in pay, will you work to change it at the county level and at the state level?
Okay. Everybody understand the question?
I think so.
Who wants to be first?
I can take it, Sally.
Okay.
Gallatin County, I'm going to get into a government class here. Gallatin County is a general powers government, and the city of Bozeman is self-governing. So they have the ability to make ordinances and things that aren't fully defined in law. Gallup County does not. We are subject to the non-discrimination policies as established by the legislature, period. And I have not seen any discrimination cases come to the surface at the county. We're very cognizant of that. So we have a very strong human resources department that is, and our interview processes are very, very fair. And we have to adhere to what is handed to us by the legislature.
I'll just answer very simply that yes, I would support any non-discrimination were anything to be brought up to the county, or anything the county could do about it. I would always be in support of that.
Great question. I think the Equal Pay Act passed in, 1963? So it's kind of astounding that we're still even having this conversation in my mind. And I think it's been a certain amount of lack of focus among all of us, and probably some cultural barriers that we haven't gotten there. But I think it's going to take a strong focus to get us there. I don't think it's going to happen organically without a lot of effort. I think the governor 3 years ago initiated a study of equal pay in the state of Montana, and they concluded that women earn about 75% of what men earn, and that's not right. I have four daughters, and I want them to have the same opportunities and pay opportunities that I have had, and I'll work hard to make sure that happens.
Well, I kind of think the federal anti-discrimination laws already cover this, because sex actually is included in them. You already cannot discriminate by sex. And so what I would look at when I looked at those studies or those stats is, well, why are women, if that case, making less or 75% of a man? I do know I'm not a big part of the business world myself, but I do know a lot of times you go in and when you apply for a job, they ask you what you want to be paid, and you actually give a figure. And your competition will also give their figures. And depending on probably who says the lower bid, sometimes might get the job. But honestly, I think that it should be not based on gender. It should be based on your work ethic, your background, and how competent you are for the job. So, thank you.
So, I've actually dug into these numbers a lot in my research. And yes, there is, and the causes of it, there hasn't been any causality associated with it yet. And the 75%, 75 to the dollar is a highly aggregated. My solution is actually to say that companies, if they're posting a job, they have to post their pay range. It's that simple. If a company posts its pay range, there's no question as to who's going to make what or anything. It's right there, black and white. When they put a job posting out, when they put an HR posting out, it's there. And if we can say, work through the Department of Labor and say, hey, you need to actually be honest and forthright with what you're going to pay up front, I think that solves the issue.
I actually employ people, men and women, and in their pay, I see no difference. The 75%, I know it's out there because I've seen it, but it's up to the individuals. And at this point, I don't know what can be done. Anything that could be, I'd be for, but it has to start with us.
When I was in the private sector before I got into this legislative thing, when I had employees, they were paid based on their skill level and their experience, period. But I can tell you that 10 years in the legislature and working with our staff, the Legislative Services Division, that is predominantly run and populated by women, and they do an outstanding job, and they get paid accordingly.
I'd like to ask the Senate candidates if you would vote to give city commissions and county commissions the authority to put on the ballot a local option tax?
Yes, I would. I would also move out of that city. I understand where this is coming from. It's coming from the fact that that tourism is such a prevalent part here in Gallatin County. It's actually one of the two top leading industries in Gallatin County, the other being the agriculture. So we do need to find a solution as to how we're going to deal with our infrastructure, and I know that's Bozeman's solution. I don't actually live in Bozeman, so I do believe that we need to put the choices closer to the people who are going to make them, but I also know that there's a very large poverty disparity here in Bozeman with the 16,000 students that are on campus, that's going to negatively affect every one of them.
Yeah, I would say no on that one. I think that's a bad idea for a number of reasons, and it's a bad idea for my district. The majority of my district is outside of city limits, and what is inside of city limits are renters and students, as Mr. Wendt had said. The problem here is, for one, it can be detrimental to businesses because people start shopping online, or they're going to go to other towns nearby to purchase the goods that they don't want to pay the tax on here. There was some property tax in that relief in that bill, but from what I understand was that it was only a flat amount. So if you pay a lot of property taxes, it's only going to be a drop in the bucket. If you pay a little bit of property taxes, it might be an all right break, but nobody here in Bozeman pays a small amount of property taxes. So the individuals who live right outside of city limits would have no property tax reduction at all, which means that would just be another added tax for them. So based on it's not good for my district, and I don't think it's good for communities in Montana, I would oppose that.
Terry, please.
It's away from me.
I think we have to look at it in the context of the overall tax structure for the state. I agree with the fundamental notion that we have to figure out a way to collect more from our $6 billion tourism industry in the state. Whether that happens at a state level in some fashion or a local level, I think is debatable, and I'd like to be a part of the debate. Two communities in my district already have resort taxes, Big Sky and West Yellowstone, and it's functioned really well for them. They have slightly unique circumstances, particularly West Yellowstone there on the edge of the park, and have kind of all that goes with that, with a seasonal economy, and it's really been a godsend for them. Big Sky, in different ways, it's been really important to them. I can see the logic for Bozeman, but I would want to review it in a larger context, and I would also like to see it, if we go down that road, paired with property tax relief.
No, I would not support a local option sales tax, but last session we did try to craft a statewide sales tax that did include reasonable property tax relief for everyone, and if we could put something like that together, I would be willing to support that, but not a local option.
I would support that, looking at that. I really would. Bozeman's got to do something. The Gallatin Valley, and to just rule out something and say we're not, you know, going to look at a resort tax or a sales tax in here. We see the people coming in, we see the tourists, and it's tough on us. You drive downtown, the streets are beat up and whatnot. So, yeah, I would support that.
This is for the Senate candidates. I was wondering, as legislators or as potential future legislators, how would you work to encourage or increase voter turnout so that our legislators represent more than just the 55% on average that turn out in midterms?
The League is always interested in that question. Who wants to speak to it first?
When I'm out talking to folks in my district, I do about all that any of us, I believe, can do, which is ask them to please vote. Even if they're not going to vote for me, I just want them to vote. And short of that, I'm not really sure what else we could do.
Make voting easier. Make it more available to everybody.
I think the crux of the issue is that the complexity of the issues that are being discussed. And I think being able to draw it down and be a little bit more conversational with it, especially in the political realm, it'll help with people become more engaged, become more active voters. I'm a millennial myself, and I have a tendency to want to see more of my generation come to the voting booth. because we're about to take over. We're about to become a major force in the political, and we need to start looking at the voting. I don't know what the actual solution is to getting more, but I think it's just in changing the conversation.
Again, Senator Vance stole my thunder. But no, when I'm out on the doors, there's actually been a number of people this year that are voting for the first time, and they are in their 50s and 60s. And that was incredible to me, and I get super excited when I meet these folks. And the same thing with college students and guys and gals that are in 18 years old and voting for the first time. So, you know, I am very active in letting people know you should vote and the importance of voting. And I think, you know, it's really neat for those individuals who are voting for the first time to actually have an actual senator or an actual candidate stop by their door, because there's a lot of folks who never, their entire lives, have that opportunity. So, thanks.
One, I'd start with ensuring that we're not creating any more barriers to voting, which seems to be the trend. There's one on the ballot this time. I urge you all to vote against that. I think it's 129. In addition, there has been proposals in the past to allow for automatic voter registration when you get a driver's license. You're entered into the system when you turn 18, you're automatically registered to vote. They still have to get there, they still have to actively participate, but at least getting them registered automatically, I think, makes sense to me. I think encouraging groups like the College Democrats or the College Republicans, who are recruiting a lot of voters and talking to voters, young voters, about issues, is really important, as well as groups like Forward Montana. They're nonpartisan. They're all about getting the youth vote out, the millennial vote, which is pretty soon going to be, 22% of our voting bloc. Thank you.
Do you want to speak to this?
I can speak briefly on it.
Sure.
I'm proud of our clerk and recorder and all that she's done to enhance voting. We have a drive-in on Main Street in front of the courthouse. You can drive in and drop off your ballots, and I thought that was pretty innovative. But there was an issue a couple of years ago, some of you remember, where there was some consolidation of precincts, and we were kind of in a box. And it was Ford, Montana, and some others that came forward and wanted to add another voting place. I think it was in Schroyer. And we voted in favor of doing that. It was complicated because the parking at MSU is a bit challenging, but we got through all of that, had a lot of meetings with MSU, and I was glad to be a participant in that.
My thoughts on this, it's just more questions, not really answers to that question. We already have 85% of the people in our county get mailed their ballot to their home, and we still only see 46-48% of people return. I don't know how you can make it much easier than that. Everybody's got it in their hand. All they got to do is fill in some bubbles and put a stamp back on it. I don't know how you can do much better than that.
Hi, this question is both for the House and Senate. If a bill comes across your desk or position, I'm not sure if you have a desk, and it is on one hand scientific evidence-based approach into policymaking, and yet when you look at it on the other hand, it seems to infringe on certain people's religious freedom and constitutional rights, which way would you lean?
Okay, gentlemen, who wants to be numero uno?
Ma'am, what was the first choice?
Scientific-based legislation.
Okay.
So some kind of policy that is looking at science data to make policy changes that impact people's lives, but at the same time, it infringes on religious freedom and constitutional civil rights.
Okay. Hypothetically,
yes.
I would definitely go with constitutional rights and freedoms. We take an oath of office. That's our duty. In fact, the Declaration of Independence says that the purpose of government is to secure our rights. That is what's stated in our Constitution, is that the purpose of government is to secure our rights. So I would always go with that first.
So one of the taglines that the Libertarian Party uses is all of your rights all of the time. So it comes down to the rights that are in espoused in the Bill of Rights, in the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, they are absolute until we change them. That's just kind of the way it works. So religious freedom does come under the First Amendment. Now, there is case law, and there's things that go along that, but scientific data does not necessarily override religious beliefs. And if it is a situation that is going to expressly discriminate against a religion, yes, I would very much oppose that.
I think science can be the foundation, a strong foundation for a lot of decisions, and I think that makes sense. And we have an obligation to make sure that any law that we pass or consider amending is constitutional. So I think it's yes and yes, to the extent that science can provide the foundation for thought and consideration of a bill, I think that's important. But in the end, it has to be constitutional as well.
I agree with Pat. Science is where I would go. But as a legislator, you're bound to uphold the Constitution. And so as your representative, that's what I would do.
As Jed said, we do take an oath on the first day to serve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the state of Montana and of the United States. And so that's the priority for me. Thank you.
Okay, one more question, and then we're going to have a wrap-up time.
My question is just for Jed Hinkle. I think you knew this was coming. I saw in the paper on Sunday that you tried to distance yourself from James King, the man who's been convicted and sentenced to serve 10 years for threatening the Bozeman Municipal Court judge. And as you and I both know, he was my tenant during your last campaign. And you sat at my kitchen table throughout that campaign with him as your campaign manager. So my question is, do you want to change your answer as you quoted in the paper?
Absolutely not at all. I sat at your table one time, one day.
That's not
one
true.
Day. But I made an appeal to the Central Committee. I didn't know Jim from anything. And I said, hey, I need somebody. I work in the mountains every day, and I need somebody to try to keep my campaign together during the summer when I'm gone. He was the only individual that approached me. I didn't know anything about him. However, Jim has always been incredibly respectful to me. He's been kind. He was a hard worker. Later on that summer, so he helped me for about a month and a half. Later on that summer, he had a personality conflict. I had people calling me when they found out he was on my campaign. I went to him, I heard his side of the story, and I went to the other parties, to their house, I heard their side of the story, and in the end, I told Jim, I'm sorry, I can't bring negativity to my campaign, I'm gonna have to let you go. And as of September 1st in 2014, I let him go. And that's the decision.
How about one more quick question?
Yes, this question is for Pat Flowers, but if we have time,
let's okay.
In past articles, Pat, you stated that you believe the state budget passed during the 2017 session was unrealistically high and poorly crafted. And in other instances, you have said that you're focused on a responsible budget. However, more recent indications have shown that the budget passed in 2017 is on track. Do you still feel it was an irresponsible budget?
I think it's irresponsible in how it was addressed ultimately and going into the special session. I would also say that the process for setting a budget in the legislature is wrongheaded, in my opinion. It comes out of a single committee, and given that that's the basis for what you then craft in terms of programs that you're going to fund with that budget, I think it should be a figure that's approved by both houses and not just a single committee. I know that's been discussed in the past, and I think that's what has to change. And so I think with that, everybody buys into the budget, everybody buys into the revenue figures, and everybody's then accountable to all those figures. That's how I think it should be done.
Do you want to speak to it?
Sure. We had a meeting with Legislative Fiscal Division earlier this year, and for a long time before the special session, the other side of the aisle said that we passed an irresponsible budget. that what the Republicans passed, even though Democrats went along with it, and it was bipartisan supported, and some of the bills that were associated with the budget were worked on between the legislature and the governor. In that meeting last spring, we were informed that the budget that was passed early in 2017 was right on track. And I specifically asked the question, and it was kind of an elephant in the room, and I said, should I do it or should I not? Okay, I'll do it. I asked the question, I said, so are you telling me that we did not need a special session last fall? And the answer was, no, we didn't. With exception of one thing, which was the backfill of the fire fund. Which means that if we had waited a couple of months, then we probably wouldn't have had to make all those budget cuts because we would have seen that the revenue trends were actually increasing and right on track.
So it's an interesting question, and I'm going to piggyback off of what Senator Vance said earlier and a little bit on Jed Hinkle. So the budget comes from the governor's office, and with Mr. Flowers deriding the budget a little bit, it's kind of interesting because the governor actually sent a letter to my house supporting Mr. Flowers. So it's just kind of, it's a little bit of a bait and switch, in my opinion. And I hate to point that out, but it is a lot of this, as Senator Hinkle alluded to, if it was on track, it was on track. Why did we get this huge feeling that it wasn't, that we were doing something wrong? And to me, that type of dishonesty, I just don't like it. I don't like anything that's being led, and that's why I'm running.
Very quickly, the way the budget process works is the budget does start in the House Appropriations Committee. It then goes to the full House, and when I was over there, we would spend anywhere from 2 to 5 days on the floor of the House doing nothing but looking at the budget. Then the budget goes over to the Senate, to the Finance and Claims Committee. When it comes out of the Senate, it goes to the full Senate, and the time I've been there, we would spend 2 to 4 days on nothing but the budget. And then the House and the Senate would get together with the governor and try to work out a compromise. So I do think our budget process works pretty well, and it's pretty well vetted. Thank you.
Okay, everybody has 2 minutes to make a closing argument for why you want to vote for him, okay? And who wants to start? Should we start? Let's start with the county commissioner. Pick on you guys. Who wants to be first?
Again, thank you very much for this forum tonight, and I want to thank the League especially for attending our county commission meetings. They religiously attend, and I appreciate that greatly. I really appreciate the opportunity to have been your county commission commissioner since 2007. It's been an honor to be a public servant in this county. I'm fully recognize the diverse needs of this county, and I'm really appreciative of my fellow commissioners who have allowed me to take a leadership role in a number of things. When I first took office in 2007, I helped design the audio streaming of all of our meetings, so you didn't have to be there to listen to what we're doing, and now you can get those recordings online. I also helped the folks in the Belgrade area install a new on-ramp off Amsterdam Road. And that was a real problem for people that were caught on that road from Thorpe all the way to the Flying J. And now there's an on-ramp with a traffic light, and I had quite a bit to do with that. And just recently, we have done a land exchange for land trust land that was under the Logan landfill. And you can't buy that land, you got to trade it. And about 8-9 years ago, I began working hard on purchasing with landfill money, not tax dollars, 640 acres next door to it. And just this Monday, I was in Helena at the land board, and they voted unanimously to approve that exchange. And that's a big deal for 100 years of growth for the landfill. And lastly, I'm really proud of, since 2007, we partnered with the Forest Service and the Friends of Highlight. And we keep that Highlight Road open for 20,000 cars a month up into the Highlight drainage. And you gotta get up there in the wintertime, it's special.
Thank you all for coming, and thanks for having us again. I want to be sure to express how excited I am to include everyone in our county in the discussion of how we're going to grow the county. That's the thing that has me motivated to run, and that's what I think that's the skill, that's the drive that I promised to bring to the county commission. I'm from Colstrip, Montana, and I find that important because I watched our community in Colstrip not develop a plan for an end that we knew was coming. Everyone I grew up with, we even knew as children that the things that were going on in our community that we loved were not going to last forever, and that we had a huge transition coming in the future. And I watched as the adults in the room did nothing to prepare that county for its end. We kind of have a much better problem here in Gallatin County. If there's no end coming, but the county is definitely going to change. And I find one of the most exciting things that I've come to realize in this process is that all the people that love our county are nostalgic for a certain time period that they hold most dear. I'm nostalgic for the Gallatin County of the late 80s and 90s, and I know people that are nostalgic for the Gallatin County of the 60s, but my kids right now love Gallatin County the way it is now and recognize that they don't get to have that county for very long. I see the job of the county commission to be the leaders in helping us realize a county that people will continue to come to and will be nostalgic for that Gallatin County of the 2020s and the 2030s and the 2040s. And I plan to be here for another 40 years to see the decisions we make now come to fruition and grow this county the way that it deserves.
Thank you to the League again for hosting this, and thanks to all of you for taking a night and being here. This is kind of the heart of democracy, in my opinion, and it's because you're here. I described in my introductory comments the qualities and experience that I'm going to bring to the State Senate. In addition, I just wanted to say I worked in state government for quite a while, and I understand the importance of transparency. And as a voter, that's what I always appreciated, and that's what I'm going to bring to my role as a state senator. I will be an open book. I also believe in accessibility. I worked in public service, and I take that very literally. I'm your servant, and I was when I worked for Department of Natural Resources and also Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and that's how I always viewed my job there. And I would view it the same way as your senator. I would work for you. These are really kind of crazy times at a national level, and I would echo what I think Scott mentioned earlier. My experience in knocking doors in Senate District 32 creates a much different impression. Montanans share a lot of the same values, and that comes across at the door when we talk about issues, even when we differ on issues. My first job in Montana was in Ovando, and I worked on a tree farm, and I met some wild characters there, including Trixie, who ran Trixie's Saloon. And out of that, I learned some valuable lessons on Montana values. And those are, Montanans are tough-minded, but they're fair-minded. They care about the land, and they care about each other. And that's what I want to take to the State Senate. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for coming tonight. I don't know if it's a smaller room, but this may be the largest forum I've witnessed yet after running three different times. So, you know, we talk about knocking doors. We talk about getting out and meeting the voters. I've done that. All three campaigns that I've done, I've literally touched thousands of people each campaign. I cannot even imagine all the conversations that I've had. But, you know, based on those conversations and the ideas that I've gotten at the doors, I've actually worked on legislation specifically to address those ideas. But often at the doors, I hear all the time, I wish that the two sides could just work together. I wish that they could just communicate, come to a compromise, and do some bipartisan work. And I'd like to let you know that I have done that. My district is probably the most diverse district in the state. I've taken tourism, I've taken agriculture, I take in middle-class neighborhoods, rental neighborhoods, and I even end with the university. So talking about trying to make everyone appreciative of the work I do in there is a very difficult task in two short four-month sessions. But I have carried legislation for Republicans in my district. I've carried legislation for Democrats in my district. I've carried legislation for Democrat organizations. And honestly, the only bill that I've committed so far to carry in this, if I'm fortunate enough to be reelected, is for a Democratic conservation organization. So I want everyone here to know that I have worked my hardest to try to do what I can for every interest in my district. Thank you.
So I'm a fifth generation Montanan. I wasn't born in Bozeman, but my mother was. And I, right next door in Lindley Park, I've got about three or four generations of my family buried there. I have a very deep connection to this town, and this is my home. When I moved here in 2006, this is where I wanted to be. What I want you to take away from this is that I'm just a regular citizen, and Montana has a citizen legislature. I just want to represent people to the best of my ability and then go back home and do my job. That's all I want to do. I don't want to play the party politics. I don't want to play anything like that. I just want to minimize the government, get them out of your way, so that you can live the life to the most prosperous. In 2011, I re-enlisted in the Montana Army National Guard, and I still serve in the Montana Army National Guard. I swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Montana against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's who I am. That's who I've always been. And I will represent each and every person's best interests. I will work to reduce taxes, and I will work to make sure that we have a growing community, not just for the next 4 years, but for the next 40, because that's really what it comes down to. We need to look into the future and not just look to the next election, because when it really comes down to it, we just want to live in peace and have a good time to go out, hit the ski hill, go out hunting, do what we need to. That's who we are. That's who we're always going to be. Thank you, and vote for me.
Well, I hope that I bring some different stuff in, and that I'm a small businessman, but I also see myself as a very avid sportsman. And I've watched as our hunting opportunities are going away. You can't get on land anymore. These kind of things aren't Montanan. And I believe that if I was elected, the things that I could bring to it would be common sense. I do have a business background, so you know that's usually not a democratic trait that you see. But I also have family, children in this valley that I would love to see be able to see the Montana that it was. And I see so much partisanship up in Helena right now that everybody seems to be blocking everybody else. And I think that by working together, we can straighten out most of these problems, but it's not going to be just one party that does it. So I hope you vote for me. Thanks.
Once again, I want to thank everybody for taking the time out of their busy lives to come out tonight, and to thank the League of Women Voters, but especially to thank Sally. This woman's outstanding. Her and I have been doing this for 10 years. And she truly does a great job. As I said earlier, I've served five sessions in Senate District 34. Was it 67, 68 in the House, and then 34 in the Senate. And we all represent a district all across the state of Montana. But I've always felt that I represent and answer to everybody in the state. So everybody in this room, if you have an opinion about what I do or how I do it, I have, like I said, a five-session voting record. You can go into the legislative website and look at it and get back to me. Jane's nodding. I'm pretty sure I'll hear something. You can get back to me and tell me, yes, you did a good job here, and no, you did a bad job there. Explain it to me, and we'll talk about it. But I feel I'm here for everybody. and I have always felt that way. But for those of you who do live in Senate District 34, you are the only ones who could vote for me. So if there's anyone here that could do that, I would appreciate it. In other words, like I said, everybody tell me what you're thinking. It's our state all together. Thank you.